this. So I thought, where am I? And the minute I thought it, boom.
Rise. This is Lil Milagro Enriquez with Mycelium Youth Network. Mycelium Youth Network prepares young people for climate change using a combination of our ancestral knowledge and practices and the best of science, technology, engineering, arts, and math thinking. For the past year, we've been collaborating with the good people of We Rise and Bioneers to bring you an amazing project to support young people in telling their stories of climate resilience and environmental justice. You can learn more about our collaboration with We Rise and Bioneers and support our work by going to our website at www.myceliumyouthnetwork.org. That is www.myceliumyouth.org. Today we are so excited to share with you keynote presentations from our conference called Apocalyptic Resilience, an Afro and Indigenous Futuristic Adventure. Feel free to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for more updates, and I really hope you enjoy these amazing keynote speakers.
For many of us, this is the talk we've been waiting for, and I just want to give a really, really warm welcome to Dominique, and I want to read a little bit more about Dominique Thomas, who's doing our keynote on Afrofuturism, Organizing, and Earthseed, a Journey to Collective Liberation. So Dominique is a grassroots organizer, researcher, Afrofuturist, Black feminist nerd based in Harlem, New York, who believes that relationships are essential to successful base building, and being strategic requires organizing from the intersections of climate change and other systems of oppression. She launched the Climate League in 2020, this year, a BIPOC training program to learn organizing and campaigning skills focused on racial justice in the climate movement. Yes. Her main objective in this work is to uplift the labor and stories of those who have been erased from climate movement while creating avenues for engagement, utilizing an organizing orientation where communities can empower themselves. Dominique Thomas is about to bring us through her presentation on Afrofuturism, so please stay locked into this, and I'm going to pass it over to our amazing speaker, Dominique.
Hey, y'all. Hey, I'm so sorry for the technical difficulties. So unfortunately, I can't see any of your beautiful faces, but I am here on the phone calling in from Harlem, New York. I'm so grateful to have this opportunity to speak with y'all more about the work that I do and how I've used Afrofuturism in that lens, which is really near and dear to my heart, and how I've come into this lens that I've used through my organizing and just also in my personal life. And so just really excited to talk with y'all and learn more about you guys as we go through this work. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about who I am, my story of self, what Afrofuturism is to me, how I've discovered it, how it really connects to organizing and how I've connected it to an organizing lens. We're going to talk briefly about how I believe we can get to collective liberation, whether that's in the climate movement or in any movement that we're working on towards liberation. Some tips and tricks that I've learned using this framework and why it's important for me. And then I have some discussion questions. I think it's important as we go through any talk, any training, to think about and think critically about how we can use different frameworks and new learnings in our work and in our personal lives. So this slide is just me. This is me. I'm a very complex, multifaceted individual, and I want to share with you guys my story of self and how I started out organizing. So my journey to organizing was not typical. I started organizing, well, I think that I didn't necessarily have the language to call it organizing. So I started doing work on campus when I was in college, and that work was really around women's rights and Title IX anti-sexual assault organizing on campus. I was also really heavily involved in the Black Student Union, and I also lived in a co-op with all Black women. And the co-op that I lived in was called Wanawaki Wawori, which in Swahili means women preparing for the future. And so it's so interesting that those words ring so true in my life now as an organizer and through my journey. And so after college, I came to New York City. I had always wanted to live in New York. And so post-college, I was like, I'm only applying to jobs in New York City. And so I came to New York and I was really interested in research, particularly research that could help people who looked like me. And so I started out as a researcher in low-income communities of color, and I was doing health surveys and health screenings for people. And I really loved that work. I really loved interacting with people. I really loved connecting with people. But, you know, I really wanted to do research and publish at the same time. And the people that I was working with at the time weren't really wanting to help me achieve that goal. And so thankfully, I found a new position. I started as a research coordinator where I was running clinical trials. You know, I was publishing research, I was conducting my own research, and I was really fascinated by innovation and the ability to really heal people, or the illusion, I should say, of healing people. If you've ever worked in clinical trials, it's more of an illusion of healing people. But in that work, my mission really was to help people so that they could show up in their best selves. And that was something that was really important to me. And that was my purpose in that work. And so I came into that work because I wanted to really publish my own research, and I achieved what I set out to accomplish, right? And I was really good at my job. You know, we should toot our own horns more often. I was really good at that work. And I left that work and that position for a number of reasons, but during that time, I was also going through a time of transition, and I was searching for my purpose in life. I was really trying to figure out what is my mission in life, and what is my purpose, and what is the field I need to be in to really lean into that purpose. So during that time, when I was going through this really tumultuous but thankful time of transition, I was organizing with Black Youth Project 100 in New York City, and I was particularly organizing with them around housing injustice. And that work really motivated me. I was working with NYCHA residents, which is our public housing here in New York City, around, you know, different housing injustice that they were dealing with. It motivated me because I was working with people who were dealing with a large amount of evictions. They were dealing with evictions, they were dealing with lead in their paint, they were dealing with inadequate heating, but they were coming from a place that was resource-less, right? Yet they were still strategic and clear around the vision that they had for themselves and for generations to come and for the community that they were a part of. So currently, I work at 350.org, which is the international climate organization, and I'm the Mid-Atlantic regional organizer there. And I really came into this work because I wanted to accomplish work that really uplifted the experiences and the strategizing histories of Black communities who have been in the environmental justice movement. And so I really found my purpose, and my purpose was really and is really to uplift the stories and empower others around an organizing orientation. And what I mean by that is really helping to orient people around an orientation where they're thinking, how can I create the material conditions that I can see myself outside of systems of oppression. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go through the talk, but that's really where I landed. And so whenever I'm in spaces, whether it's organizing spaces or training spaces or what have you, I recognize that I'm a representative in that space for my community. And those are the people that I'm accountable for, whether they are physically present or whether they can't be there because of lack of access. And so for me, it's important to understand that I'm not an expert in anything. I know some things, and those are gifts that I want to share with people. And these are things that have helped me in my organizing. And I think it's really important to really be intentional and really be cognizant of the pieces of us and let those pieces shine. You'll see on the slide, there's lots of different parts of Dominique, right? And so there's the fancy fashionista Dominique, where I like to get dressed up and go out and enjoy myself. There's the athletic Dominique, where I like to run and ride my bike in the city. There's the adventurous Dominique, where I like to climb trees and try new things. As you see, there's the researcher Dominique, and I like to publish and let people know what I know about certain subjects. I also like to protest, and I like to be hitting the ground, hitting the pavement, and speaking up for causes that are really important to me. And then there's the fun Dominique, right? I like to dance, and I like to hang out with my friends, and I like to support the people that I love when they're celebrating important things in their lives. So I think for me, the best piece of Afrofuturism has been that it's all the pieces of me. It's every piece of me that's so important and so complex, and it's using all those pieces of me to understand that my wings are wide and my wings will never be clipped. And Afrofuturism really gives me a lens in which I can soar and achieve all the things that I set out to do. And so what is Afrofuturism? There are a number of definitions out there if you're looking for them around what Afrofuturism is and how different people have used the term and defined the term in a way that makes sense for them. And so the first term of Afrofuturism, or actually saying Afrofuturism, was actually coined by a white man named Mark Dehry in the 1990s. And so I think it's important to highlight that context of the term of Afrofuturism came from a white person, but that Afrofuturism is inherently celebrating the Black experience. And that Afrofuturism in and of itself has been around since the 1950s. And so the definition that I hold and the definition that really resonates with me is by Alondra Nelson. And she really explained Afrofuturism as a way of looking at the subject position of Black people, which covers the themes of alienation and aspiration of a utopic future. And I think that's so, it's so interesting. And as y'all said in my bio, I'm a huge nerd. And so I love anything that has to do with science fiction and thinking outside of the box. But her definition is so poignant when she says, it's a critical perspective that opens into the many overlaps between technoculture and Black diasporic histories. Afrofuturism looks across popular culture to find models of expression that transform spaces of alienation into novel forms of creative potential. In the process, it reclaims theorizing about the future. And if that in and of itself is not organizing, then I don't know what is. And so for me, it's really important to understand when I'm looking through an Afrofuturist lens that it's really rooted in my Blackness and in the Black experience. But that doesn't mean that Afrofuturism or using a futurist lens is not something that other groups or other communities cannot use. And there are many cultures in many indigenous cultures and communities that use futurist lens and frameworks, specifically when thinking through organizing for future generations. To me, that's an Afrofuturist or futurist lens. And it's important that we really learn from the different frameworks that are provided to us to be the most well-rounded organizers and campaigners, etc. And there's this really great quote that I love. by Greg Tate, who is a cultural critic and a musician. And he says that being Black in America is a science fiction experience. I'm just going to leave it at that. I'm not going to explain it, but I think that is so important and rings true in 2020. But it's just important to have that framework. But on the slide, there's a picture that says abolish the police. And so when I think of abolition and as an abolitionist myself, and I think through the abolitionist lens, abolition to me is Afrofuturist. It's thinking through how can we dismantle this current system that we have and imagine a different system that takes care of community and that centers people and really centers transformative justice over punitive justice. And so Afrofuturism is everywhere and it's all around us. And it's so important to really lean into that. And so when I think about Afrofuturism, you know, I think about all the different examples that have shown up in my life. And, you know, at the time didn't necessarily have the language to call it Afrofuturist. And so I have just four small examples of Afrofuturism and how it rings true in my life. But I would be curious, you know, you can drop in the chat how you think by reading this definition, Afrofuturism has shown up in your life. So first, Harriet Tubman, the ancestor. Harriet Tubman is an Afrofuturist. She was an Afrofuturist in my eyes. When you think about her story, she was able to free so many enslaved people because she trusted in her faith. She trusted so deeply in her faith and in the universe that she was on the right path. You have to understand, she did not have the internet. She did not have Google Maps. She did not have resources to know, is this the right path? But she knew in her heart, in her faith, that this was the right path, and she trusted in that. And there was no manual, like I said, and there was no guarantee, but she organized, she galvanized, and she brought people into the future she was envisioning for the future of her people. Like, that is so powerful. And I use that example and I use that lesson and that teaching, and I carry that with me as someone who's a descendant of enslaved people, because that is so important to understand all the Sankofas. And so Sankofa is about fetching the lessons and the stories from the past and using those to guide us into the future. And this Sankofa, this nugget, this lesson of faith and trusting that you are on the correct path is so important in organizing, particularly for Black, Indigenous, and people of color. So I love that example. The next is Sun Ra. I don't know if y'all know about Sun Ra, but if you don't, you should listen to his music. He was a jazz musician in the 60s, 70s, 80s. And his story is so interesting because he only went by Sun Ra because during his teen years, he said that he was transported to Saturn and he really recognized the power of the universe. And if you see the picture on the left, his outfit is just so dope and so Afrofuturist. And one of these days, I'm going to get this get up. But I really felt that connection to Saturn. I'm a Capricorn, and so I'm ruled by Saturn. And so I just really feel really connected to him, and his music really blends a lot of Afrofuturist themes. And it's just beautiful to find these examples. And so we also have the women of the Black Panther Party, which is just so important. They were fighting for the future, right? And fighting for future generations. They were based out in Oakland. Shout out to Oakland. And they really wanted to ensure a suitable future for our people, for Black folks, and for Indigenous people of color. And so I just really love that example of women really leading that charge and how a lot of really wonderful, beautiful things that came out of the Black Panther Party are still instituted today, like Free Breakfast Program came from the Black Panther Party, and now students across the nation have free breakfast. So that's just a beautiful thing. And so then we got my homie, Parable of the Sower. If you have not read that book, I highly, highly, highly suggest. And that's Octavia Butler. And Parable of the Sower is all about apocalyptic, futurist ideas and teachings. And her stories really came from an imagination that centered around Black people and specifically Black women at the center of fantasy and science fiction. And so the main character in Parable of the Sower, Lauren, is really able to create a future she sees and work towards living amongst the destiny, which I just love so much. And so on slide 6, this example is so important and so poignant. There's a poem by Gil Scott Heron that came out in the 1970s called Whitey on the Moon. And this poem really lays the foundation to understand not only exemplifying Afrofuturism, but also is around Black social thought concerning culture and technology and things to come. So this poem critiques the U.S. space program. And so if you don't know, we landed on the moon in 1969, and the space program was funded by, obviously, government funds, but at the detriment of the marginalization of Black Americans. And so the poem really looks to identify the neglect by the government as a reason of poverty that's occurring in marginalized communities. And the argument that Gil Scott Heron is making is that although this was a huge endeavor for the U.S. as a whole to land on the moon, who did it really benefit, right? Who are the people that were actually benefiting from this program? And so in the poem, he really connects to, you know, capitalism and poverty and environmental destruction and militarization were themes that were shown in this work, but also amongst his other work. And one thing that I just want to point out about it is I think it's so interesting to understand that his poem really raised questions about which America got to glorify the moon landing and what were the costs of putting Whitey on the moon. So if you haven't checked out his work, please check it out. It's really dope. But I just wanted to share this other example of a way in which Afrofuturism shows up in the art. And so when thinking about Afrofuturism, right, we just talked about the definition. We talked about different examples that show up in organizing and social thought movements across the arts. So how does it really connect to organizing, though? And so for me, Afrofuturism is really, like I said, is about those Sankofas. So going back and fetching those lessons and using those lessons to really drive us to the future that we are envisioning for ourselves. So Afrofuturism is about reclaiming the histories of the past, using those lessons and propelling ourselves to the future. So it's, for me, it's about reclaiming the Black experience. For you, it may be reclaiming the Indigenous experience or the people of color experience or the woman experience. And so it's about reclaiming those things that are important to us. It also relies on science fiction, right? Just like organizing, it's important to understand that organizing is an art and it's a craft. It's something that you hone. It's something that you practice and you get better at. It's a skill. And so the same thing in organizing, there's no way to know what's going to work or what's not going to work, right? Just because you have a blueprint of something that's worked previously doesn't mean it's going to work in this new situation. And so it's about being nimble, and it's about being generative, and it's about really taking time to understand that we don't have all the answers, but we have to trust in our faith, and we have to trust in the universe that we are on the right path. And so, as I said earlier, abolitionist is an Afrofuturist framework, and it's rooted in the principle, the foundation of it is really reimagining what it looks like to live outside of the current infrastructures that exist, which are honed to systems of oppression. And so if you think about abolitionists and, you know, the calls for defund the police and things like that, through an Afrofuturist framework, it really opens up your mind to really imagine what you look like outside of those systems and what your community looks like outside of those systems. So for me, when I think about organizing, right, organizing to strategize means spending as much time as I possibly can reimagining our future and reimagining the future that I want to live in. It's also having the understanding that I may not be alive or I may not be here when we get to the future that I envision. And understanding that that's okay, right? Knowing that I've set up the foundation, that I've set up the organizing work for people to stand on the shoulders of me and I'm standing on the shoulders of my ancestors, and that that work is going to push forward. But we have to have that understanding that it may not be in our lifetime that we see that future, but understanding that we will get there. It's hard though, right? Having that lens is hard, and coming to that realization is hard. And for me, I've had times where I've had doubt and I've struggled, but I know that I need to rely on myself and the people that are a part of my community. And I rely on the universe and my faith in this framework. And I know that I'm going to get there. So white supremacy, we all know about white supremacy, and we know that it is excellent at making us respond to fires constantly. And we don't get a chance to recharge and reimagine. And so when we think about Afrofuturism and futurist lenses, it's important to understand that it's about creating a campaign that relies on that vision. And that's the foundation of it. So you'll see on the screen, it says defund, abolish, and divest. Climate, racial, and economic justice, right? So we think about climate justice, and we think about its connection. There's so many connections when it comes to envisioning ourselves through the climate movement, outside of, you know, the fossil fuel industry and outside of environmental racism, but also understanding how it's connected to some of these larger calls for defunding the police and abolish, right? So I'll just give you one quick stat. In 2018 alone, Goldman Sachs, which is the 14th biggest financial backer of the fossil fuel industry, they gave $250,000 to the LAPD Foundation and about $15,000 to the New York Police Foundation. We also know that JP Morgan Chase, which is the largest financier of fossil fuels, has given millions to police foundations in New York City and New Orleans. So when we call for defunding the police and divesting from fossil fuels and abolition, it's important to understand that these are connected. Police departments and the fossil fuel industry are both based on white supremacist, violent, extractive forces, and that's how they operate. And so when calling for one or the other, it means that we're really bridging these movements together. And so I just wanted to give you that little piece of information, why these movements are connected and why I'm dedicated to working not only on climate justice, but racial justice, economic justice, and abolition of, you know, police departments and mass incarceration, because we know that they're all connected. So when we think about Afrofuturism, there's examples out there in organizing. The Black Agenda 2020. If you haven't read it, go read it. This came from Black Futures Lab. This is their Black to the Future Action Fund. They created an entire Black agenda for 2020. They did a census with Black people nationally. I volunteered and participated in the census. We were asking people about what are key areas that people want to focus on, or what are things that are important in your community. And they created an entire agenda about the things that are important to Black community. And these are the things that we're going to be working on as an organization. And so these things exist. This is Afrofuturism, thinking to the future, having a vision of what we want. So when thinking through theory of change, and earlier in the presentation, when I was going through I Am, DC in Lovecraft Country, one of my favorite episodes was the I Am episode where Hippolyta named herself. I am, or I was looking for my purpose, right? And over the last year, year and a half, I've really come into what my theory of change is. And so if you go to slide 11, this is my theory of change, and so I'm going to read it to you guys. So my theory of change rests in creating the material conditions for disenfranchised communities to imagine ourselves outside of systems of oppression. This is accomplished by awakening an organizing orientation to inspire and empower people to construct our own methods of success. I'm like, yes, that came from my brain. So tooting my own horn right now, this came from my brain. And when I say it to myself, it rings so true. When I say it to myself, I close my eyes and I envision what that future looks like. I envision what does it mean to awaken an organizing orientation in the people that come from my community and the people that I'm accountable to. And so it's really important for everybody to have their own theory of change and start constructing that. Think about what are the things that you care about? What is your purpose? What is your mission? And your theory of change can change throughout time, obviously. It's not something that's static, But start thinking about that. What is it that you're envisioning for the work? What is it that you're envisioning for the work? I like to say things three times, so I'm going to say it one more time. What is it that you're envisioning for the work? So if you go to slide 12, we're going to just talk a little bit about what I have learned using this framework. And so this is my favorite part of the talk because it rings so true. And so I do this work to get to a point of liberation where my mind is free. And so I said earlier, I may not be alive when my people and all marginalized or oppressed folks are at the promised land of liberation, right? But I do this work so that my mind, which has been colonized, everyone's mind has been colonized by things, and we're constantly working to decolonize our minds, where my mind is free. You can never corrupt my mind and my values, which is linked to my soul. And so I have faith and trust in the universe that I am on the right path, that I am on the right course. Ella Baker said that strong people don't need a strong leader. So I think through, how am I constantly making myself unnecessary in spaces? So for me, the organizer's job is to go into communities and figure out, how do I make myself unnecessary to a certain point? Because other people have the skills and they have that organizing orientation to lead the work. She also said that oppressed people, whatever their level of formal education, have the ability to understand and interpret the world around them, to see the world for what it is and move to transform it. That is Afrofuturism. We have the ability. So I'm speaking to all y'all right now. We have the ability, Black, Indigenous, people of color, women, LGBTQ plus people, we all have the ability to see the world for what it is and move to transform it. We have the ability to see in our minds what it is that we want to accomplish and work towards it. When we get to liberation, whether that's in my generation or, you know, seven generations after me, when we get there, if I look to my left and I look to my right and I see like-minded people beside me, that is a blessing, but that is not a guarantee, right? So also, I want you guys to think about that. When you're working, when you are fighting for liberation, not everyone's going to agree with the things that you agree with. Not everyone is going to be on that journey with you. And the best thing that you can do is do what is best for you. Constantly be interrogating your own actions, your own thoughts, work towards a place of liberation. And it's important to understand that my mind is the most powerful tool that I have as a Black woman. And if I can see the things in my mind that I want for the future and what I want for my community and what I want for future generations, then they're not impossible, right? White supremacy will tell me that the things that I see for myself are impossible, but they're not. It's a falsehood to tell us that they're impossible. I've seen it. It's real. And I'm working every day to make sure that that becomes a reality. And so when we think about collective liberation, it's about having faith that we're all on the correct path. It's about gathering in community. It's about working together with all the skills and expertise towards that vision. I'm going to read you this quote on the screen by the Kampahe River Collective, which was a dope group of Black feminists who said that if Black women were free, it would mean that everyone else would have to be free, since our freedom would necessitate the destruction of all systems of oppression. And that is collective liberation. So we have a few minutes. So we're going to do this very, very, very tiny, quick visioning exercise, because I just want you guys to start thinking about what is it that you are envisioning for your future. And so I want you all to close your eyes. Close your eyes with me. My eyes are closed. And I want you to take a deep breath in. One, two, three. Hold and out. One, two, three. And with your eyes closed, I want you guys to imagine, envision a world without oppression. Get into it. Let your mind start wandering and thinking and conjuring. Imagine what that world looks like. Now, when you're in this world, what would your name be? Would you have the same name? Would you have a different name? What do you look like? What does the food taste like in this world? What does everything smell like? What does scent smell like? What do you see in this world? Who do you see? What does it feel like to feel emotion in this world? What is one superpower that you would have in this world? What work would you do? What would it feel like to laugh in this world? What does the sun feel like as it radiates on you? What does that feel like? What does it feel like to walk down the street during the day, during the evening, at any time? What does that feel like? How do you greet other people? What are their expressions? Just live in that world for a second. Breathe it in deep. Understand that this is your vision. This is your motivation. Whatever came to you, that's your vision, that's your motivation. Figure out, what are the sankofas that you need to fetch? What are the lessons? What are the readings that you need to read? What are the skills that you need to get to that vision? And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. How do you feel? Just take it in. Take it in how you feel. And then we'll just go to the last slide. And these aren't questions I want you guys to answer, but these are just things I want you to think of. These are questions that I'm constantly asking myself. What happens when people spend their lives being fed visions of the future that don't include them? What does that do to their self-perceptions? What is your greatest fear when it comes to this work? And how do you use that fear to motivate you? What practices do you engage in to ground yourself? How do you see your work connected to other forms of justice? And lastly, this is the most important, what are you visioning for the future? I can't see any of you guys, but I just want to say, before we get into some questions, how grateful I am to be in this space with you guys. I can feel the love radiating from my phone, and I'm radiating that love back at you guys. And organizing is hard work, and just understand that we're in this all together, and we have one another, right? We have each other's back, and it's such a beautiful mosaic that we've created to be in community with one another and to be really working towards a future that centers people and centers joy, and centers love. And so I thank you, and I'm gonna pause there. And if anyone has any questions or comments, I would be more than happy to answer those.
Thank you so much, Dominique. This is Lil. So one of the questions we have is, how do you contend with the current moment where our abilities to create and live these beautiful futures now are often driven into the ground by neoliberal practices of navel gazing with identity politics that ask us only to do internal work rather than putting the majority of our energy into collective organizing, building grassroots people power and engaging in direct actions to challenge and dismantle capitalism, the state, settler colonialism, imperialism, militarism, and cis-heteropatriarchy? No pressure.
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent question. Yeah, what I do is I just keep organizing and I keep building with community. And I'm a little rebellious. I'm a little bit of a troublemaker. And I've just always been that person who I'm going to do it regardless of what you tell me I can and can't do. And I think with building community with others, you really create that weave and that net where you can really lean on other people and really keep working towards the future that you're envisioning. And I think another thing is just something that I've been thinking through is really figuring out how to be as many steps ahead of all those systems of oppression. It's hard, but thinking through, like, how can I be like 100 steps ahead of white supremacy? And what does that look like? That in and of itself goes back into, what does that visioning process look like? What are the skills that I need to actually do that? And how can I actually get to that place? But yeah, I think it's a hard question to grapple with. The thing I always go back to is, what are the things that I can build with community? And then also, I really rely on the Sankofa. Like, what are the lessons from Harriet Tubman? What are the lessons from members of the Black Panther Party? What are the lessons from any Black political prisoners who have come before me? And how can I learn from the work that they've done? How are those things relevant in the present? Not sure if that answered your question, but those are the things that I think of. And I think that's just a question that we should always be grappling with through any organizing or campaigning that we're doing.
Thank you, Dominique. And so we have one last question from Marilyn that says, what would you say about the importance of having a global, international perspective when visioning for the future?
Oh, yes. I'm all about it. I think in the U.S. specifically, we're very like U.S. focused, and we forget that there are other people globally, particularly for me, like the global Black diasporic experience is very important. And so I think when visioning and doing that work, it's so important to think about how are we building not only within our own local U.S. communities, but how are we building internationally and how are we learning from people from other places who are going through either similar or disparate experiences from us. And so I'm all about building internationally and thinking globally. And so when I do my visioning, I'm thinking about like, how can Black folks and Indigenous folks and people of color folks globally get to a place of liberation and not just us in the US. And so it's really important to think about those experiences. And also, if there's opportunities to build globally, do that work. It's one of the best experiences that I've had was building with a African community in Berlin through some of the climate work that I've been doing. And so just building with them and learning about like the things that they're facing in their community and how we can work together was such an enriching experience. And so I suggest that if you have the opportunities to do that work globally, and in your own visioning processes, please do that.
Thank you, Dominique. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you for making this keynote presentation possible. I know you were having tech issues. So if we can all just unmute ourselves so Dominique can hear and just like send her so much love.
Thank you.
You're amazing.
You guys have made my day, and I feel so warm. And although we have the technical difficulties, it's okay because the universe got my back, and there's always alternatives. And I'm so glad that I could be here in voice and in spirit and all these things. And oh, I just feel the love. And so thank you. And thank you for listening and for engaging with the things that are important to me. Even if they sound a little woo-woo-woo, it's okay, because we are who we got, and I'm just very excited for the future and the things that we're envisioning as a collective.
Thank you for listening to our amazing keynote presentations from our first annual Apocalyptic Resilience and Afro and Indigenous Futuristic Adventure Conference.
For the past year, we've been collaborating with WeRise and Bioneers to bring you an amazing project to support young people in telling their stories. If you are interested in learning more about our work or our partnership with WeRise and Bioneers, please go to our website at www.myceliumyouthnetwork.org. That's mycelium, M-Y-C-E-L-I-U-M, youth, Y-O-U-T-H, network, N-E-T-W-O-R-K.org. Feel free to go to our website, donate, or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram for more updates about our work. Wishing you all the best, and can't wait to talk to you soon.